Good morning, everyone. This is Abel Arbat speaking from the capital markets team at Naturgy. We hope you're well, and we thank you for joining our 2020 full year results call. Together with me, we have our executive chairman, Francisco Reynés, together with our head of financial markets, Steven Fernández, our head of controlling, John Ganuza, and our secretary of the board, Manuel García Covaleda. So we're going to go ahead with some company remarks addressed by our chairman, and then we will open the floor to Q&A. So with that, I'm handing it over to our chairman. Please, Francisco.
Good morning to everyone, and thank you, Lavelle, for your introduction. As always, it's a pleasure to address me today to all of you that are connected to this conference call of the results 2020. As you have already got the presentation this morning, we have thought that maybe probably more efficient for all of us to go faster and quicker into the Q&A part, and just to take a couple of minutes of attention on the key remarks of this special results presentation for this year. First thing, of course, and chapter one in our presentation is about the recent events which are around the tender offer that has been sent or presented by IFM, the Australian fund. I just wanted to, on behalf of the company, be clear on some key parts of this tender offer that are affected the affecting the company. First and most important is that it has been an unsolicited offer. You know, it is addressed to maximum of 22.689%, which means it's partial and is at 23 euros per share at the time of the presentation, and with all the deductions on dividends that could be paid after that. On this part, just to again remark that Naturgy was only informed shortly before the public announcement. Then any question you may have around that will have probably very limited answers, because our knowledge was extremely weak. Second, the bidder has not been in touch with the company, therefore the bidder has not received or requested any information from the company in their process to analyze this tender offer. And the main information on this tender offer, Naturgy was aware of the terms just at public announcement. I think that all these three points are very important for us to be understood by the market. What is the company doing in the meantime? Well, very clear that we are continuing to operate the business on a business as usual basis. Of course, for the interest of all shareholders are today and should today be clear that the company continues its operation on a running business. We are developing our efforts, as we have stated many times before, which is readdressing the strategic direction of the company towards the energy transition opportunities. And within these opportunities, we are continuing our rotation strategy. Portfolio rotation strategy was forming part of the strategy, as we have explained many times before. On the board, as you know, the board will have a legal obligation, to give an opinion to the shareholders on what the board thinks that should be the position of the company and the shareholders in front of the tender offer, but it's not the time at all. It will come, and when the time will arrive, the board will comment on the offer, not now. Because of that, our Capital Markets Day is postponed, subject to further developments. But the main reason is that although the company is working hard, and because of this tender offer arriving at the time that we were preparing the presentation, we are considering how the company should work and trying to or avoiding any condition or anticipating any position of the board, and this is what the company and its advisors are now analyzing, and of course Capital Markets Day will come therefore in due course. I can't comment more on the tender offer, but I think that was important for me to take this opportunity to be clear with everyone. Probably some of you will have some questions around the tender offer that may arise at the end of the presentation. And with all my sorries, but I might say that probably most of your questions will not be able to be answered for the time being. On the presentation for the 2020 results, I would like to highlight on one side the scenario. As you have seen in our presentation, the scenario was clearly addressing headwinds during the whole year, including the effects on the pandemic, including the effects on the Forex in Latin America, and the rest of the effects in particular on the gas market in the LNG in special. Our results, I need to apologize to all the analysts, since we have changed our management structure, we are readdressing our reporting structure to be consistent with the responsibilities within the company. It has positives and negatives. I know, and again I apologize for the negatives, which in particular are for you the ones that are following the company and its results, and the capital markets department is, as always, but even more now, available for you to help you in this readdressing of your models in order to understand better how we have restructured our reporting. But I think that it makes a lot of sense to highlight a very important part of our new strategy, which is renewables, that will be reporting as a whole unit, and you will then be able to follow how we are increasing our assets in operation and how it develops the CapEx and our pipeline. Most of you were not aware that our renewables capacity today already in operations is around 4,600 megawatts of power, 4.6 gigawatts in operations already. And I think that this was part of what we want you to be aware of. On the rest, again, apologizes for this change. What happened during the year 2020 is that, number one, we have met our guidance. If you compare at the constant perimeter, and again, I would like to, ask the analysts that have not yet changed the perimeter that are, for some of you, still including Chile in your figures, Chile electricity in your figures. As you know, in the figures we are presenting today, Chile electricity is no longer forming part of the EBITDA base, and that's the reason why we are saying that we have met the guidance of 4 billion in EBITDA, because at the time that we established the guidance, Chile electricity was forming part of the reporting, and since we reached an agreement with China State Grid for the sale of Chile in November, Chile electricity is already out of the reporting. In terms of ordinary net income, our ordinary net income has been of 872 million euros, clearly below the year 2019 because of all the effects, as I mentioned before, in the scenario. But the company continues performing its cash flow from operations, generating cash. And in this year, the cash flow from operations has generated over 3,400 million euros. It's important to remember that as a partial offset of these headwinds that we suffered during the year 2020, the company has been working hard in the efficiency program, and we have been able to reach over the target of 500 million of OPEX reduction by 2020. We reached the level of 545 million euros of CAPEX, of OPEX efficiencies by 2020. Then 2 years in advance, we have overpassed our target in OPEX efficiencies. Has also been a year for asset valuation reviews. And in this sense, the most important thing is that we have conducted a 1.3 billion asset evaluation through an impairment on mainly our operations in thermal generation in Spain and Argentina. Two important remarks on this accounting exercise. Number one is it is not impacting at all the cash in the year 2020, then it is non-cash impact in 2020. And second is that after that, then from 2021 onwards, it will incorporate a positive effect on the P&L due to lower amortizations. More or less, the positive effect through the P&L of years 21 onwards will be around 75 million euros per year. On Chile electricity, as you know, the binding offer has been accepted and the contract has been signed in November 2019. We are expecting to close the transaction before the end of first half 2021, and it's just depending on some local permits. Things are going on track, and we are not seeing any clouds in the sky to advise on any potential delay on this timing. Regarding net debt in our balance sheet, we have included a proxy on how would have been the net debt in the company in the case that the proceeds from Chile would have been already incorporated in the cash balance of the company. This is the reason why in page 17 you may compare between net debt in fiscal year 20 and pro forma net debt in fiscal year 20 as well. And the difference of these around 2.6 billion euros is because of the proceeds that we are expecting to receive from Chile, which are duly signed and, of course, just pending on these approvals to be closed. You have a quite detailed reporting on how every business unit has been developed. And with me, we have John Ganuza. If there is any question, special question for him to answer, we can go ahead into the Q&A part. But as a summary of the 2020, I would like to highlight what is written in page 26, is that results starting at the line of incomes have been clearly affected by energy demand, prices, and Latin currencies all together boosted by the pandemic. We are, as point number two to highlight, working hard in structural changes as a demonstration of how the OPEX base of the company is moving towards the targets, even overpassing the targets in advance, and also working on gas renegotiations with all the main gas suppliers, as you have already known through Sonatrach or other major suppliers. It's important to again highlight the efficiencies acceleration and the non-cash effect on the asset valuation and the sale of Chile Electricidad on a disposal agreement fully binding. How are we seeing the year 2021? Number one, of course, we did not expect this new situation that we are now living with the tender offer. And of course, one of the clear key events of the 21 is how the tender offer will finish, how and when. But in the meantime, the company will continue working on the main streams that we have established here for our networks, the energy management, renewables, and assets. What I would like to highlight is that networks in LATAM, that's consolidation of Chile Electricidad, a very important issue to be considered. In energy management, the expiration of the concession of EMPL, which is finishing at the end of October 21. On renewables, and thanks to the last acquisitions in the U.S. and other investments close to the public ocean that has been already discovered last week in Spain. The company is clearly committed during 21 to continue this rerouting towards renewables energies, and we are foreseeing a minimum investment of around 1 billion euros during the year. And in terms of assets, on top of executing the two binding agreements with Chile Electricidad and Unión Fenosaraz, our longer disputes with Egypt, what should finish in the next coming months, we will continue rotating the portfolio as we have already established as part of our strategy and part of the advantages of the company for the next years to come. I think that probably you would be more interested in a Q&A part, and I will hand over to Steven and Abel to address this part of the presentation.
All right, so we are open.
Go ahead, Evan.
No, operator, please, we're open for questions, so please go ahead with the line of questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad now. If you change your mind and wish to remove your question, please press star two. Our first question today comes from Alberto Gandolfi from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning, good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for taking my questions. I appreciate it's a difficult moment in terms of, like, you know, how much you can say, but considering the CMD has been postponed for now, I just wanted to start perhaps with your energy transition towards green energy. And I mean, thank you for disclosing the 1 billion euro per year investment in renewables. I was wondering if you can give us maybe a tiny bit more details about that, maybe a very broad split by region and maybe a very broad split by technology. So how much should we expect for wind versus solar and maybe US versus Iberia, for instance? A second question is about, you know, your 2021 outlook. You know, the sum, I mean, it's very helpful, slide 27. Your final sentence says persisting headwinds, but you have new opportunities. So I was just wondering, do you think you can still grow EBITDA in 2021 versus 2020 at constant perimeter, considering, you know, the loss of EMPL on one side, the effects that continue to remain a headwind, but perhaps a bit better LNG and more renewables? So I was trying to see the direction of profits. And the last question would be, can you maybe tell us briefly if you have any restriction? I think the answer is no, as long as you don't frustrate the offer. You are absolutely free right now to announce, hypothetically, an asset disposal, right? You know, this tender does not stop you from taking those type of strategic steps. And thank you so much for disclosing all of it.
Thank you very much. And nice to meet you, at least by phone, since many months, to meet us in person. I would pass the word to our General Secretary in terms of confirm what you have stated. I will tell you that what he has explained to me, and he will do it now in more detail, in which are the obligations and the restrictions that today the board has in the context of a tender offer. And I would prefer that he is more precise, not only for you, but for the rest of the audience, because as you may imagine, this is something that the board is considering, taking into serious consideration, because we are working for the best of all our shareholders, and of course, for the best of the value. Please, Manuel, if you can elaborate a little bit more on that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So once a tender offer is announced, just from the moment of announcing, it's not yet that it is filed in the CMB, so already since last 26th, there's a duty of so-called passivity. That means that the board is prevented from doing anything that could derail the tender offer. Nevertheless, there are relevant circumstances in the current tender offer. First of all, it's just a partial tender offer, and this is relevant for the purposes of the intensity of such passivity rule. Second thing, if we consider the composition of the board of directors of Naturgy, where there are proprietary directors that represent more than 50% of the shareholder base, this means some sort of proxy of what the shareholders meeting could decide, accompanying whatever proposal the board of directors has made. And the law provides that the General Assembly can decide on whatever and can surpass any restriction. And thirdly, what could question some of the decisions of the board of directors are mainly in the part of portfolio rotation. And this is something that the board of directors has already started and even communicated forward to the market since long ago. So this amounts for us to a business as usual way of running our business. So for all those circumstances, it's a very limited application of this possibility rule in the context of this specific tender offer.
Thank you, Manuel. If there is any more clarification needed, as you know, we have already said that Manuel is today joining this conference call, although I think that it has been clear enough to say that the company will not stop to continue pursuing value creation opportunities because of the tender offer, because this is in the interest for the existing shareholders, for the future shareholders, and for the living shareholders. Then this is the most important obligation that we have in our minds. On the split, I told you that it was around 1 billion, and if we will need to differentiate between regions or countries, more or less a 30% will be in Australia. As you know, we have already won some projects that we disclosed, but of course these projects are attached to obligations of investment, and more or less 30% of the figure will be invested in Australia, 30% in Spain. As you have seen, we have already won part of the public ocean the government made public last week, and this is also attached to some investments, and 30% in the US, which are linked to projects that were in the portfolio of the acquisition that the company made at the beginning of the year in the US. The remaining 10% is in Chile, projects that were already starting and are continuing and finishing, and we will be in operations during the year 21. On growing a bit for the future, it is true that EMPL is finishing. As we have already stated, EMPL will finish by end of October 21. But it's also true that the company has demonstrated that it will do the best it can to offset through our internal work, mainly through efficiencies in OPEX reduction, how it can be done to compensate lack of businesses somewhere. We think that the scenario is not going to give us easy moments. It will not be as easy as some years ago it was, but the reality is that the answer is yes, we will grow in 21 versus 20.
Very clear. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Javier Suarez at Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my questions as well. I will try to make some questions on the unsolicited bid. I understand that it's difficult to answer some of them, but hopefully on some you can give some more light. It's on the definition of an unsolicited offer. Obviously, you refer to the company that was informed about the bid just minutes before the presentation. But it seems that some of the investors that are seated on the board has been informed on the offer. So the question is, if you can give us answer with us your conversation with your existing shareholders on this unsolicited bid, and if you can give us a lot or share with us this conversation on what the tender could add to the company, its strategy, what they intend to do, et cetera, et cetera. So the question is on the existing shareholder that has been publicly saying to be informed about the offer before it was launched. Second question is on other shareholders that are not has not been given an opinion. If you can share with us any conversation with criteria on their position on the offer or with the government. The third question is on the timing for the board to give an opinion. If you can share with us your best guess on when the board of the company could give an opinion on the unsolicited bid that has been presented. And the fourth and final question is, you mentioned before that the company believes that the bid should not interrupt the asset rotation policy that is at the core of your strategy. So if you can share with us, not the business plan, but the short-term priorities of the company in light of this unsolicited bid, if it is changing anything, or the company just continue, believe that can continue its own way as before. Many thanks.
Thank you very much for your questions. I think that, again, I will also ask Mr. Covaleta to help me on your third question, which is about the timing. Although I am aware and I have been told by him that it is too early for the board to say a single word, but I would like him to explain to everyone how it is going to be the process for this opinion to be disclosed to the market. But before, and I'm sorry for that, but as you can imagine, I mean, I am Naturgy, and I can talk on behalf of Naturgy, its board and its management committee, but not on behalf of shareholders. And apologizes, but I cannot talk on behalf of them. They have their own words, and if you have any question for them, please address these questions to everyone in particular. And on the rotation, before Mr. Covaleta explained us a little bit more about the timing, on the rotation, it is clear that portfolio rotation forms part of the strategy of the company since years, not now, it's not new. Therefore, because the rotation strategy forms part of our strategy, the first demonstration has been that we have closed a deal in November with China State Grid to sell our assets in Chile, Electricidad. And we already said at the time of the presentation to the market that it was not going to be the first and the last opportunity of asset rotation, and we were working on other projects that we were not going at the time, neither now, to disclose, but which are fully aligned with our strategy, which is going to reduce volatility, increase visibility, and incorporate a portfolio which amounts much more hard currencies. In this sense, the company continues working and is not forming part of a new strategy, neither a defense strategy against the tender offer. It's already established a strategy since years, and it is going, this tender offer is not going at all to stop this strategy, because we think that is for the benefit of all shareholders. I would like Manuel to comment on the process that I have already introduced. Manuel, please.
The law provides that the board of directors has to issue an opinion on the tender offer once the tender offer acceptance period has started. In fact, it has to do it within the 10 first days. But as you know, the tender offer, the prospectus to be filed by the CNB, as far as we know, since we read it in the announcement, the offeror is expecting to file it within the next couple of weeks. So with the process that it will take in the CNB and maybe the permits that also the public announcement mentioned, we may be a couple of months already away from that moment. So it's not an issue to be dealt with in the short term, but more in the horizon of a couple of months.
Interesting. Many thanks.
Our next question comes from Fernando Garcia. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my question. I wanted to know that on the gas contract renegotiation costs, if you have reported already all the costs or there is more pending for 2021. And then I would like you to explain all the concepts of these costs. No? And finally, can you provide some detail about what could be the impact of this going forward of this gas contract renegotiation? Thank you.
I will pass the word to John Anufla, who will answer that in more detail. Please, John.
Yeah, hello, Fernando. As we've disclosed during this year, I would say that the bulk of the contracts that could be renegotiated have been renegotiated within this year. There are some contracts that still are going to be renegotiated on 2021, and as you are aware, most of the contracts that are subject to renegotiation do have ordinary pressure clauses that do apply on a three-year basis. So some will start in 2021, 2022, but I would say that the bulk of the renegotiation, we've seen it this year. Regarding the impact, as you can understand, this is a sensitive information. As the same as during this year, we have not disclosed the impact that each of the renegotiations has had. We've just commented the fact that they were closed. We cannot disclose nor give any estimate about what the impact we expect to have, we expect to see from those renegotiations.
Our next question comes from the line of Javier Garrido at JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thanks for taking my questions. I apologize because I have a few. I will try to be as short as possible. The first one would be if you can elaborate on your approach to the balance sheet. You have mentioned in previous calls that you believe that Naturgy has a significant investment capacity. I can understand that you cannot talk about numbers, but at least you can give us your views of what are the ratios, what are the metrics that you would be looking at, and what is, in your view, a sustainable profile for the capital structure of Naturgy. That would be very useful. Second question would be on the sentence you include in your 2021 guidance for the supply business. You mentioned you expect an improvement mainly supported by mild recovery and structural changes. I was wondering if you could elaborate on what these structural changes are and in which direction they will work. And third question is on Mexico. The Mexican government has made a proposal, a legislative proposal, to change the dispatching order as well as the conditions of the contracts with private operators servicing the CFE. And you could elaborate on what could be the impact of that proposal for your Mexican business. And last question would be on your remarks about the expectation of high EBITDA in 21 versus 2020, just to be 100% clear. Do you mean reported or ordinary EBITDA or hopefully both? Thank you.
All right. So, hi, Javier, this is Steven. On the balance sheet approach, we've mentioned before that our target is to protect the BBB rating right now. That means that we're going to be looking at ratios such as FFO to net debt, which has to be at a minimum of 18%. Clearly, when you look at the balance sheet, I think you need to take into account the cash coming in from disposals, and specifically, as you can think, in terms of FFO to net debt with that 2021 horizon, you can imagine that that ratio is going to improve significantly. And then there are other elements that would allow us to also protect that BBB, for example, being more proactive in the market, like some of our peers going out for hybrid instruments as an instance. So we think it's doable, and at the same time continue investing at the rate that we think we can. So that's going to be the focus on the company. In terms of the growth that the chairman mentioned, we're referring to ordinary EBITDA growth for 2021.
So hi, Javier. Regarding your second question, which were the main changes that we foresee in the supply business for 2021, I think that under structural changes, what we have to see is the change in the commercial strategy that is the result of the new management that we have. This change in the commercial strategy, we think that, and we're certain that it's going to change the trend that we've seen in these past few months when we were losing clients. So what we are already starting to see is that we have a net growth in clients due to a new acquisition strategy and also an improved retainment strategy. Regarding the third point, Mexico, it's true that the government has announced that they have the intention of changing the merit order and also reviewing the PPA, the current PPA that CPEs have signed. But I think that there are two things, at least one thing that we also have to keep in mind is that one of the measures that the government has said regarding the energy sector has already been contested by the Supreme Court in Mexico. So I think that we have to wait and see whether these measures in the end can be applied or cannot be applied. And when they come in force, then we will see which impact do they have in the businesses that we have there. But actually, let's always remember that the main part of the business that we have there is PPA related, and therefore it would mean changing the profitability of PPAs that they were signed a long time ago, and therefore we were talking about retroactivity on a contract that is already existing. So it's not something that can be done so lightheartedly from behalf of the government. I understand that the government says that they want to do it, but another thing is being able to do it.
Okay, thanks very much.
Our next question comes from Lillian Stark at Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I was just, I had a couple of questions. If you could share with us, what are the main assumptions that you have changed or the key drivers that led to the impairment in the CCGTs in Spain in particular? And then the other question I had was more around the LNG business, what we've seen so far in terms of the movement in commodities. How are you thinking about hedging into 2022? And just wondering if, just on the back of these movements, have you seen any changes on prospects for to sell this business or more interest in terms of the likelihood that or the number of buyers that have shown interest in this business versus the past?
Thank you, Lillian. I will answer the first two questions and the third one. Since it's asset rotation, I will leave it to the president. Regarding the impairments, one thing that we must always keep in mind is that we must always and we regularly check what's the value in use of the assets that we have. We already did it for the first half results. We do it because we had to do it, but also because we were aware that there were some concerns on behalf of ISMA and the CNB in Spain. We did the impairment test in the first half. But it's true that in this second half, what we've seen is that there has been a substantial change from the perspectives that we have of the, how the COVID situation was going to improve. I think that there was a certain consensus when we were doing the first half results that the recovery was going to be pretty fast. Most of the people were talking on a V-shaped recovery. But after summer, what we've seen is that the COVID situation has there are different scenarios, but none of them right now envisage that we're going to go to a V-shaped recovery. Basically that the price and the commodity scenario that we were looking, not only on the short term, but also on the mid-term and on the long term, has deteriorated substantially. Also, other measures have been announced by, the, for example, the European Commission that has pledged to increase the level of CO2 emission reduction that they're going to have by 2030. So I think that as also said, that changes the perspectives that we have to have on a long-term basis. And when you take those two things into account, I think that they have been the main levers that explain the impairment that we've seen on our thermal generation assets. Moving on to the LNG businesses, as we said, and I think that there is the level of disclosure that we give is much greater than the one that other companies, our peers, give. We try to give you, and the IR people do it, they put us an Excel sheet where you can see that our position that is our close, the open position for 2020 and for 2021 is fairly close. So actually currently for 2021, the level of close volumes that we have is around 80%. That means that 80% of our volumes, the margin that they have, are already locked in. That means that you only have 20% that they're subject to any upsides or downsides regarding the market. Shipping is concerned, we do have that main part of our sales are backed by a shipping fleet that we do have leased on a mid- and long-term basis. So we are, on most of our sales, we are shielded from the fluctuations that we've seen on short-term shipping prices. But it's true also that if we want to do some kind of short-term optimizations, we have been constrained due to the fact that there have been high shipping costs in this fourth quarter, beginning of the first quarter. So I think that on the whole, but in the bulk of the business, we are part of the hedging and the fact that we want to have cash flow that are as stable and as visible as possible, but also that precludes us from benefiting from upswings that we're seeing in the short term, like for example the one that we saw in the fourth quarter or in the first quarter with the GTM prices. Does that mean that in some cases we can benefit? Yeah, but the part that we can benefit is also fairly small. And I don't know
on the asset rotation, I would like to be clear and non-specific. Clear because it is a trend and it's a strategy that has been forming part of the company that we started years ago, and we finished just in November the first real step towards an asset rotation strategy, which has a very important additional objective, which is, as always, value creation. This is not only a question to reduce volatility and increase predictability, but it's also unlocking value from existing asset base. On this sense, we have already said we want to reduce our exposure to soft currency countries and increase the exposure to hard currency countries. We want to be more oriented to the energy transition and investing more in renewables, and be more in networks and less in merchant. But we have also demonstrated that we are patient and we take our time to capture the best value possible in the market and to execute the transactions when is the appropriate moment for that. And in this sense, the company has not stopped and is continuing working towards these objectives, but is not in a rush, because being in a rush is the worst scenario to be a smart investor or an investor and a smart seller.
Perfect. Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Jorge Guimaraes from JB Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much for taking my question. The first one would be some more color on the question you were just answering on LNG. When you say that margins are close, if you could give us some idea at what level. So this would be the first one. The second one is also a more clear something that is in the presentation. There is a mention about remunerated capex. So I would like to understand what do you mean by remunerated capex in the results presentation. And the final one, I don't know if you can disclose this data or not, is the breakdown of EBITDA in renewable between hydro and non-hydro, so between hydro and wind and solar in Spain. Thank you very much.
Okay. I think I'm going to disappoint you a bit, but well, I'm going to start with the one that I'm not going to disappoint you, the second one. Regarding the remunerated capex, what we want to say there is that usually what we see is that people, the distinction that you do is growth and maintenance. But in network businesses where we have a RAP business model, we get remunerated regardless of whether it's maintenance capex or growth capex. So that's why we want to talk about remunerated capex, because if not, people would look at the maintenance capex, for example, in our electricity distribution business in Spain, and they would see it as some capex that is a cash outlay that it doesn't generate any revenue. But in the case, since it goes to the RAP of our electricity distribution business in Spain, it gets remunerated exactly the same as if it were a growth capex. So that's why we classify both of them. Regarding to the first question, where you wanted to have a bit more color regarding the margins that we've closed in LNG, we usually do not disclose that kind of information because it's sensitive and it would impair both our sales and also our constant renegotiations or deals, conversations that we have with our gas providers. And the third one, I think that what makes sense and the way that we report it currently is renewables together hydro and non-hydro, and I don't think that we are going to disclose the difference between both things, because what we think it makes sense is to see that both of them, all of them, they are renewable technologies and they should be treated exactly the same. So I think that people do not ask to have a disclosure between PV and wind. I don't know why we should have a disclosure regarding to hydro, because the technology difference is exactly the same, but if we treat it as a business, it's the same. So I think that that's why we're not going to give a disclosure for the time being.
Okay, many thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Victor Perro from GVC Gesco. Please go ahead, Victor.
Hello, good morning. Thank you to all for taking my questions. Well, one is if we could have more color. I read in the report about the resolution of the Egyptian situation, about the timing, and in the relevant fact, you said that you will receive 500 million euros plus 200 in assets. If you could elaborate a little more on that, what kind of assets, if these assets are in property or lease, in terms of timing, and this is the first question. The second question is about, I guess that in the results of renewables, when you group Spain and USA, there is no USAID results yet, no? I want to check that. And that's all.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your question. On the Egyptian side, and taking into consideration that it is just pending on some condition precedents that should be fulfilled before closing the deal with the ENI and the Egyptians, non-economics has changed since the last information we disclosed to the market, but the most important thing is what is going to happen now and how are we foreseeing the future and more according to the contract. I will pass the word to Manuel García Cobaleda, who can elaborate more on how is he seeing the closing of the Egyptian agreement.
Yeah, when we informed on this transaction back in early December, we said it was subject to certain conditions present to be fulfilled. One of them was to achieve the authorization of the antitrust authorities, both in Brussels for ENI and in Spain for Naturgy. Both have been made public right before Christmas, so this has been achieved. The second main issue is the restart of the plan, that the operations after 7 years restart properly. And this is being the case. So right now the plant is restarting without any problems. So we are targeting to close the deal within the first Q, so within the month of March.
Yeah, thank you. Regarding the second question, about, you're completely right. So in 2020, we have almost no impact on the USA. In 2021, we have seen already CAPEX, as the President said before, part of the renewal CAPEX that we're going to have in 2021 already is going to be from the USA. And hopefully 2022, we should be seeing not only CAPEX in the USA, but also EBITDA coming from there.
Our next question comes from Manuel Palomo from Exane BNP. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning, everyone. I've got a couple of questions. First one is on the cost of debt. There's been a, I would say, very good development in the evolution of the cost of debt in the year 2020. And as you mentioned, more investments will be made in hard currency countries. So my understanding, and please tell me if I'm wrong, is that we could see maybe a bit more debt, but in hard currency countries, hence the average cost of debt will or could continue to come down. So my question is, what is your best expectation about the evolution of the average cost of debt for the coming, let's say, couple of years, just to have a view? And then second one, sorry to insist on the impairments. Well, the first one, I think that you mentioned that the impact would be around 75 million euro in P&L. Am I right if I think that that is the impact on DNA? And then also on impairment, I wanted to ask you about if part of that rationale of those impairments and to what extent could be related to the early shutdown of coal, or if it's mostly related, I'm talking about the Spanish fleet, on CCUPs. Thank you.
All right. So thank you, Manuel, for your first question on the cost of debt evolution. You're right. There's a notable improvement relative to 2019. That comes on the back of a few elements. For example, clearly the deconsolidation of CG Chile Electricidad helps reduce the overall cost by around 20 bps. But we're also benefiting from a low rate environment in other Latin countries. For instance, Brazil would be a good example where we have a sizable portion of the debt at variable rates. So we've seen a significant reduction there from levels of around 7% to levels of around 4% right now. So we're looking into locking those levels, by the way, to reduce our exposure to variables and make sure that is an ongoing improvement. If we think about the evolution moving forward, you're right. I mean, part of the growth is going to be debt financed, absolutely. It's going to be debt financed in, as you rightly mentioned, in areas with lower cost of debt than some of our other markets, for instance, in LATAM. And that as a whole should bring down the overall cost of debt moving forward. You also should consider that some of the improvement that we've seen in the year 2020 is linked to the maturity of some bonds and some facilities that we had here in Spain that were expensive. That's something that's going to continue happening as the time moves on. Year 2021, 22, 23 should be a driver. And we're talking about being able to refinance right now at levels that imply mid-swap spreads of around 60, 70 bps. So you should see a material improvement, okay? But, you know, we're not going to be providing new guidance yet for the estimates that we have regarding the cost of debt for 21, 22, 23, rather than to say, again, the direction is a downward trend.
Yeah. Hi, Manolo. John here. Regarding your questions to impairment, please to give as many details as possible within the constraints that we have. You are completely correct. The 75 million euros impact in T&L is associated with lower D&A, because now we have the book value that we have has been decreased by 1.363 million euros. And regarding the rationale, mainly is the change in the scenario. So, I mean, we have had no impact, for example, from the shutdowns or from coal, because our coal had been already shut down, and already in the first half results, they were reported that they did discontinued operations. So we haven't had any impact in this impairment regarding to the shutdown of coal. I think that one thing that also is important that people always take it for granted is Argentina, because I don't know why, but one thing that we had in Argentina, only this year, FX has depreciated 34%. As I suppose, I think that most of you already know, the way that regulated businesses in LATAM try to compensate for the depreciation is that we get tariff indexation related to inflation. In the case of Argentina, we haven't had this indexation for the past 18 months, and the outlook doesn't look really well for 2021. So this means that in euros, only this year, we've lost 34% of our value that we have just to the fact that the peso has depreciated 34% as we didn't get the indexation, and it doesn't look like we're going to get it anytime soon. So I think that that's also something that has come into the impairment test and the impairment value that we've presented in this this results.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Harry Wyburd at Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. Three questions from me, please. First one, and a couple of these are follow-ups to what we've gone through before. So on the, just wanted to focus specifically on your oil-linked purchasing contracts, which I think you're now reporting in their own segment, the markets and procurement segment. And I guess there's two dynamics going on with those contracts. You've got renegotiations, and of course the oil price has sort of fallen, but you only pick that up with a lag. So, and I know it's very difficult for you to comment on specific renegotiations, but what I want to understand is just looking at the profile of EBITDA in that new segment, what's the outlook for this year? Do you expect that EBITDA to increase as the benefit of lower lagged oil prices kicks in and the renegotiations kick in? Or have we already had most of that effect in the fourth quarter? So in other words, should we be expecting an increase in EBITDA from that specific segment this year? And then secondly, on the balance sheet, you mentioned that your target of maintaining BBB. I wondered if you could give us some way of kind of gauging what you think your total balance sheet capacity is now, ideally in sort of billions of euros, or something that could help us understand that quantum. Obviously, you've made a commitment to CapEx in the US, but it'd be useful to know how much you think you have left after that. And then in terms of where you would invest it, and I think sort of renewables, clearly, developed market renewables is clearly a key area, but would you, for instance, look at buying developed market networks? I think you were linked, obviously, to stuff in the UK recently. And then finally, just a very quick one, on restructuring costs. I think at the start of this year, you were guiding to about 300 million euros of restructuring costs. And I think this morning you've reported 200 million. So I just wanted to understand, does that mean you're going to have more restructuring costs next year, or were you able to make cost savings with lower restructuring costs than you expected?
So hi, Harry, it's John here. Regarding the oil-linked questions, I think that there's at least one thing that we always have to keep in mind as far as understanding what might happen next year is that most of the renegotiation of the contracts, all linked contracts that we had, were done at half of a year. So I would say that for next year, two things could be positive. So on the one hand, that this year, it only reflects half year of the renegotiated contracts, and also, as you pointed out, that depending, it looks like the scenario might go better. Having said that, you know that we don't give any guidance on a global basis, and we are not going to give it on a partial basis. But I think that at least these two hints that I give you an idea of what could happen. Regarding to the restructuring costs, I think that we've achieved or overachieved the goal that we set for at the beginning of this year. This year we said that we would finish this year achieving 500 million euros of efficiencies compared with 2017. And actually what we've achieved is 545. It's true that some of the efficiencies that we've been able to achieve have been conditioned by the COVID situation. But I think that right now we are not going to give any guidance regarding on how we're going to be moving forward on efficiencies or in other on the main levers of the business.
So on the balance sheet capacity that we may or may not have, you have to bear in mind that if we're thinking about it from a rating perspective, the one thing that we need to avoid is to consider that capacity from a spot perspective, and rather we need to look at it from a forward-looking perspective. So when we do, that would imply considering our expectations for how the business evolves and how it grows. It also implies whether or not we're going to be making use of alternate financing sources. We're not going to be providing you guys with guidance, but the one message that we would like to transmit is that we do feel, and our estimates suggest, that we have sufficient firepower so as to significantly increase, if we so desire, the investment programs for the company for the upcoming years as a driver for our transformation. Okay? And that is excluding any additional inflows that could be generated as a result of the asset rotation program, which would significantly multiply our capacity to redeploy cash.
Okay, many thanks.
We currently have no further questions on the call.
Great. Thank you very much, operator, and thank you, everyone, for joining this conference. As always, feel free to reach out to the Capital Markets team. If you have any additional questions, we will be happy to help you best we can. So with that, we conclude our conference. And thank you very much, everyone. Bye-bye.